From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 23rd day of December 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Merry Christmas. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Check out the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Drew Lerner will be along with a look at the weather forecast for the week ahead, and we'll hear one of my favorite stories, recorded with Max Armstrong many, many years ago, about Joe Ertl. That's the legendary tractor maker out of Dyersville, Iowa. And it all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible in part by Justin Wood, Paul Stevens, Tim Smith, Scott Harms, and Mark Soderberg of Archer Financial Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm. You can learn more about the services they offer at 800-637-3123.
Well, let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. On this Monday afternoon, the nearby March wheat at $6.95, that's down 4, and the soft red July at $6.20 and a quarter, 4 and a half lower. Hard red July at $6.50 and a quarter in Chicago, 5 and a half cents lower. March corn futures were up a penny today at $4.34 and a quarter. The May, 4.42 and a half up one, and July at 4.49 and a half up one as well. September corn at $4.55, 3 quarters higher. December at 4.61 up a quarter, and the March contract at 4.71 and 3 quarters for next year, a quarter of a cent lower for the day. January beans at $13.28 and a half, down 10 and a half cents. March at $13.19 and 3 quarters, down 11 and a quarter. May contract in the bean pit at $13.05 and a half, down 10 and a half, and July at $12.90 and 3 quarters, 10 and a half cents lower. August at $12.63 and a quarter, down 8. September at $12.04, that's 7 and 3 quarters lower. And November beans at $11.65 and a quarter, down 4 and a quarter cents. Bean meal at $444.20, down 2.40. Bean oil at $39.28, 16 lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures nearby December at $132.70, up 17 and a half. February at $133.95, a nickel higher. January feeders at $166.67 and a half, down 30, and the March feeders at $167.10, 17 and a half cents higher. February lean hogs, $86.20, down a nickel, and the April at $90.95, down 22 and a half cents on the afternoon. The outside market shows for the day crude oil trading at $98.70, 62 cents lower, and the RBOB gasoline at $2.77 and 8 tenths, that's 4 tenths of a cent lower. Ethanol futures $1.92, up 9 tenths of a cent. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the spread between those two look like. 85 and 7 tenths of a cent wide. That's a penny and 3 tenths of a cent narrower than it was on Friday afternoon. Natural gas at $4.46 and 6 tenths, up 4 and 8 tenths. And the diesel fuel for the day at $3 and 6 cents. That's a penny and 7 tenths of a cent lower. Gold futures trading at $1,197.40 an ounce, down $6.90 on the finish. And the U.S. dollar down 0.12 at 80.45 for the day.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
About 18 months ago in the summer of 2012, I took off with a group of farmers on a bus, and we made our way to New Orleans and visited Dan Zwicker, the export facility that belongs to CGB and Zinno there. We're going to do it again, not to Zinno this time around, and a bit shorter, March 10th, 11th, and 12th. We're going to go see John Deere in Moline, the combine plant. We'll watch those being made. And then the next day in Waterloo at the tractor plant. We're going to put both of them back to back and make a trip there to Moline, Illinois, to watch John Deere make combines and tractors. It should be a really good plant tour. I hope you can go along with us. It's scheduled for March 10, 11, and 12. All the details, again, on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I hope you can join us for our second Follow the Corn trip. This one is Follow the Corn. John Deere will be in Moline and Waterloo on the 10th, 11th, and 12th of March. Find all the details again at willag.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Have you signed up yet for our Evening with the Voices of Illinois Agriculture? Don't tarry, because this will happen pretty quickly. There are only about 100 slots, and if you have not signed up, this is our fundraiser for scholarships to the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. It's set for Friday evening, January the 24th, at the Spice Box on the second floor of Bevere Hall. That's on the south end of the Urbana-Champaign campus in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. We'll kick off the evening with a keynote address by none other than the president of the University of Illinois. I can't tell you how happy I am that Bob Easter will be able to address us that evening. And then we'll move into our dinner and eventually get to a really good marketing panel, including Steve Fried from ADM Investor Services, Pete Manhart, Wayne Nelson, and Jackie Vanks. Daryl Good will be there to wrap up things, and Gary Schnittke will talk about crop insurance. Oh, and the president of ADM Investor Services, Tom Cadlec, says he'd like to say a few words too. It'll be brief. It should be a fantastic evening if you didn't make it to the first one. How about the second annual Voices of Illinois Agriculture event that kicks off at 6 p.m. January the 24th? You can find all the details on our website at willag.org.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
On this Monday afternoon, let's check now the futures markets. On the phone line, as usual, Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Merry Christmas to you, Kurt.
Well, from all of us from Bates Commodities, Merry Christmas, Todd.
Tell me about the last week. I've been on the road with the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. It wasn't a pretty picture if you listened to them for a good portion of the day, but I have to say that the bankers and the farmers were all in pretty good moods nonetheless. How did you see the market play over the last week or so?
Well, the bean market continues to be doing what it's been doing here for the last about 4 weeks. It seems like these January beans take a run up towards 1350 runs out of buyers and back towards the 13, 16, 15 area of fine support. Trade continues to see Asia interested in booking some beans. The fear continues, though. Whenever we get up to resistance, we sell off on fears that they'll cancel some of those beans once the southern hemisphere has those beans more readily available to the market place. And we'll see how that unfolds. But we've got to remember, too, that the loadings in Asia is going fairly well. There's no backup. Crushing margins in Asia are fairly reasonable. So, until we actually physically see these beans move and see the cancellations, this bean market's probably going to be an up and down trading affair. So we'll monitor that as we go. Also, we saw reports, maybe a little better chance of some moisture in some of these areas are starting to dry out, per se. So we'll see how this news continues. It's going to be a slow process here. Volume was real light today. Don't see a big pickup here unless we see some business out of the extraordinary take place. Beans were down, but corn sounded a little support this past week on unwinding of the spread. Also, too, Asia starting to find some DDGs and cargoes of corn passing there. Inspections and letting a little bit of corn flow into the country. So we'll see how that goes also. Then wheat just continues to be the victim here of just not a whole lot of world wheat interest, especially from Egypt. Then, too, overall, we just need some dynamics here to offset the bearish world picture that they painted here as we move into 2014.
Any final word before I let you go for the day?
Well, I think it was 10 years ago today, the mad cow popped up on the radar here. And so we've got that 10 years history out of the way and looking forward to Asia continue to open their market to U.S. beef.
Thank you so much.
Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He's with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC. Land auctions, farm management, financial services, and institutional and corporate real estate. Information on upcoming land auctions can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
On the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Nick Paulson, Ag Policy Specialist from the U of I, now joins us to take up potential changes farmers will be dealing with the farm programs being discussed in the Farm Bill. Those have been discussed for quite some time now, Nick. They have not changed very much, but it's good maybe to go through the process. What will be the changes if they come to some kind of agreement, potentially, on the Farm Bill? I'm thinking maybe we should start with the supplemental coverage options.
Okay, supplemental coverage. The supplemental coverage option is a new crop insurance program that is included in both the Senate and House Farm Bills that have been passed this year. So the fact that it was in both bills and the design of the program is very similar in both bills is a good indication that that will be included in the final bill that comes out of conference. What SCO is a supplemental plan that you could add to your individual crop insurance coverage, and it covers some of the losses in that insurance deductible area. For example, if you're buying 75% revenue protection, you don't receive an insurance payment until revenues fall below 75% of the guarantee. The SCO program would trigger payments resulting from smaller losses and then cap out kind of at that 75% coverage level. It's a relatively complicated program. It's going to provide a lot more options to farmers, which is a good thing, but does add some complexity to the crop insurance decisions that people make.
Is it likely or unlikely it will be included in the 24 crop insurance program if Congress were to pass a January farm policy bill?
A farm bill passed in January technically would take effect for the 2014 crop year, although everything I've heard about the ability for the risk management agency to implement a program like that, the time frame that would be required, SCO would almost certainly not be an option in 2014, and even getting it ready for 2015 would take a pretty big effort just because of all the options that there would be in rating those programs and making them available to all program crops.
So they would have to create a giant spreadsheet of sorts, I suppose, that would have 75, 80, 85% crop insurance, and then all the different variations of the crop insurance, plus the SCO, and then ratings by county and by other enterprise units and such.
Exactly. So, there's a different, basically SCO is defined differently for every possible individual crop insurance coverage choice that you could make. So SCO with 75% RP is different than SCO with 80% yield protection. So there's a lot of combinations that RMA will have to rate for them to make that program available to farmers.
What argument was made both in the House and Senate that allowed them to include it on both? Because there aren't very many things that both sets of farm bills really agreed on.
I think one kind of theme that's pretty consistent across the two farm bills, as you said, the other commodity programs differ in both bills, and there's much less agreement in that commodity title. But I think one general theme that both chambers agree on is that crop insurance is becoming the main piece of the safety net. So while we're trying to reduce spending and coming up with cuts in most areas of the farm bill, such as the commodity title, the programs within the commodity title, I think there's a pretty good consensus or support for strengthening the crop insurance program. So, again, losing income support from commodity title programs, but shifting more support, more funding for creating additional risk management options through crop insurance.
Income support, meaning direct payments, will most assuredly be going away.
Exactly. So in terms of the commodity title, again, an agreement or a consistency between the two bills right now is that the current combination of direct payments, countercyclical, and ACRE would be eliminated and replaced with some modified target price and revenue-based programs that, according to the Congressional Budget Office, would provide a lower level of support and save money, again, relative to those programs we have now.
Is the current crop insurance program, should a farm bill not be passed prior to February, in play for the 2014 growing season? Is it a separate entity on its own?
Yes. The crop insurance program, as it currently operates, isn't necessarily affected by whether or not a farm bill gets passed. Again, that crop insurance title, the changes that are made are largely the introduction of new insurance programs, so more options. So whether we get a farm bill passed in January or not won't impact your ability to go in and buy revenue protection or yield protection for the 2014 crop.
Nick, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Nick Paulson, Farm Policy Specialist at the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the Illinois Farm Economic Summit series.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Now up next, this Christmas, little farm boys and little farm girls from all over the nation will be waiting, not so patiently, for Santa to bring them a tractor, just like their dads. As you'll hear, if they're lucky, it'll be American-made from Dyersville, Iowa, the home of Joseph Ertl, toy maker. I produced this story in December 2001. What I want from Santa this year is a toy tractor. Well, Santa actually already brought it to me. He made it himself. It's a meadow green Oliver, 1955, trimmed in clover white with orange and black to set it off. And this little toy tractor is the first model he's ever made with a radio mounted right there on the fender. It's just like the one I clung to as a little boy when Dad and I went to the field. My Santa is Joe Ertl of Dyersville, Iowa. For 50 years, the company his dad founded has made the dreams of little and big farm boys come true.
Now I'm only 5 years old. I've got to do just what I'm told. Santa Claus is going to be dropping in on me.
Max Armstrong, farm broadcaster, WGN, U.S. Farm Report, Chicago. Every kid loves a tractor. There's no doubt in my mind, boys love tractors. And as we get a little bit older, some of us who grew up on those tractors think back to those days. I mean, when I look at my Farm All Super M or the Super H, I think about days of sitting in that tractor, bringing in a load of corn when I was a little boy and coming in on a chilly October night with that moon coming up over the corn stalks. Or I think about cultivating corn down to the Wabash Bottoms. I was on one tractor and Dad was on another. You know, there's just something very, very special, especially if it's a tractor that Dad had. You know, there's an emotion that gets wrapped up in that.
It is an emotion that Max Armstrong knows all too well, and one that has made Joseph Ertl's toy tractors worth a lot of money. At this auction in November, to benefit scholarships for future farm broadcasters, Max spent $300 on a 1/8-inch scale Farmall MD. It's special for many reasons.
That's an M diesel, and this one is special because it's a 50th anniversary tractor. On the frame of that tractor are raised letters pointing out that it's the 50th year of toy making for Joseph Ertl, the legendary toy maker who owns Scale Model Toys.
Would you like me to put anything up here on the your name or anything?
Joe Ertl is a celebrity in his own right, and for years his autograph has been sought after. Like Santa, he gives it freely.
Can you write, thanks for support of farm broadcasting?
I'll date it there for you, too.
You've done this before.
Yeah, a few thousand times.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
your
help.
Thank you for supporting.
Well, it started way back in 1945 when my father was on strike at a local foundry, and he started making castings in his basement. And one day he made a farm toy, and I was 10 years old at the time. And at that time, the toy tractor sold so well, he never went back to his job again. Of course, I grew up with the business. And then when I was in my senior year of high school, I started taking drafting courses. And we went from sand casting to die casting, and we had to have drawings. So I started making the drawings for the toys, and I've been designing them ever since.
Today, Joe Ertl's company is called Scale Models, and he still loves to design and make toy tractors, in large part, he says, because the farm community has welcomed him into its vast family called agriculture.
It's been a pleasure for me to work my whole life here in the designing of these toys, which have made so many people happy. You know, the farmers have really been great to our family, and I can't think of anything more wholesome than a little toy tractor and to be a pretend a farmer. It's so much better than some of these toys I've seen made over the year, and it's been a pleasure for me to be associated with the farmers and the farming industry and everything. It's just been a wonderful life.
That's a Christmas present from a very dear friend of mine.
If you're lucky, what you'll find under your Christmas tree this year is a toy tractor made by Joseph Ertl in Dyersville, Iowa. That's what's on the top of my list. Well, by the way, thanks in advance, Santa. Your friend, Todd Gleason, at the University of Illinois.
Well, could there be something I might have missed? I had quite a few things on my list. I hope he can fit it all under that Christmas tree. I hope he can fit it all under my Christmas tree. Let's see, I know he can fit the, he'll fit the airplane under there. He can get that bicycle in there and the gumball machine. And I don't know what he's going to do with that horse.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's a Monday afternoon. This is the closing market report. On the phone line with us to check the cash grain market from the Andersons right here in Champaign County is Carolyn White. Good afternoon to you, Carolyn.
Good afternoon and Merry Christmas to you.
Well, Merry Christmas to you as well. I'm ready. Are you?
I am.
Excellent. That's always good because we're here at work and we can't be doing, we can't be doing something else.
That's exactly right.
You know, it looks like basis has remained pretty strong despite the change in the marketplace to lower since August. And beans have remained fairly strong. Is that what you're seeing today or not?
Well, I think some of the basis levels have backed off just a skosh here. You know, there's not a lot of stuff moving right now, anticipating that probably 50 to 60% of the crop is still on the farmer in the elevator and hasn't been sold. But we had offered a limited amount of free DP last week, and I think it was filled within an hour. So we know there's a lot of grain out there, and I think probably if we can get a little pop in this market after the first of the year, we'll see a lot of stuff move.
Does that mean we'll see both the basis and the futures markets tumble lower?
Tumble lower? I'm thinking maybe a little better on both.
Oh, really? Oh, why would that be?
Well, just, it's positively been nothing positive in the market. And, you know, with the news with China and all of that, I mean, it just feels like, I don't know, the beginning of the year will be better.
Oh, well, good.
I'm a little more optimistic, it sounds like, than you are.
Oh, I try. My opinion is not to have an opinion. That's what they pay me to do. So we're all good. Hey, thank you so much. Quickly, a bid for the day.
You bet. Cash corn for December, Jan, and Feb, 426. March is 427. July, 437. Fall of 14, 436.
Thanks so much.
You bet.
It's National Pfeffernuss Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1675, Charles II of England issued a proclamation suppressing coffee houses. The public response was so negative that he revoked it on January 8th of 1676. In part, the proclamation declared, whereas it is most apparent that the multitude of coffee houses of late years set up and kept within this kingdom and the great resort of idle and disaffected persons to them have produced very evil and dangerous effects, His Majesty hath thought it fit and necessary that the said coffee houses be, for the future, put down and suppressed. In 1901, Sir Joseph Henry Gilbert died, an English chemist. He is the co-inventor of superphosphate fertilizer. Superphosphate is a compound produced by treating rock phosphate with sulfuric acid, phosphorus acid, or a mixture of the two. In 1893, Sir John Bennett Laws opened the first fertilizer factory, thus initiating the artificial fertilizer industry. The following year, Gilbert joined him, and they began a collaboration lasting more than half a century. And in 1982, the Environmental Protection Agency announced it had found dangerous levels of dioxin in Times Beach, Missouri. Eventually, the EPA purchased the town for $32 billion, quarantined the site, and spent $110 million for cleanup. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
This is the Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Now here's Drew Lerner with today's weather forecast.
Most of the Midwest weather was quite unusual. Over the course of the weekend, we saw widespread precipitation of all kinds occurring across the region. Most of the precipitation was significant in the sense of heavy rain and flooding occurring from the Delta into the eastern parts of the Midwest. We saw 2 to 6 inches of rain occur across some of that region. Just to the northwest of that, there was a wintry mix of precipitation types that occurred. Most of that area included Missouri over two portions of Michigan. And in these areas, we did end up seeing some moisture totals running upwards to 3/4 of an inch and upwards as high as 2 inches in a couple of spots. Now, not all that was ice, though. And further to the northwest, 2 to 8 inches of snow accumulated from Kansas to Wisconsin. Most of it was 2 to 6 inches, but the snow was adequate in protecting some of the small grain crops from bitter cold conditions that are out there this morning. In fact, it will be out there again tonight across much of the region from Missouri and northeastern Kansas and western portions of Illinois northward to the Canada border. All of those areas will likely experience temperatures below zero tonight, but there is snow on the ground in a fair amount of that region, and we're not expecting to see any serious threat to the soft wheat or hard red winter wheat. With that said, I do want to point out that there's still snow-free conditions out there in northwestern Kansas and southwestern Nebraska after last week's storm system moved through the central and eastern parts of the U.S. without bringing any meaningful precipitation to that particular region. Temperatures have been down into the positive single-digit readings in the snow-free areas of hard red winter wheat country, but there has not been any kind of serious crop damage resulting from those conditions. Temperatures just haven't been quite cold enough this time around. The low temperatures overnight tonight will be back into the positive single-digit readings in some of that hard red winter wheat country. But again, we're not expecting to see any crop damage result. We're done with all the bigger storminess across the Midwest now. It looks like as we go forward through the next several days, in fact, a full week, we're probably going to see a frequent series of storms moving across the region that will produce just light amounts of snowfall. These systems will just move from the northern plains to the Great Lakes region most often and just produce a rather limited amount of snowfall, and anywhere from a dusting upwards to a couple of inches will occur in most instances. We will expect the first disturbance already moving across the northern plains as we go through the night tonight and into the upper Midwest tomorrow. The system will go ahead and move across the Great Lakes region as we go from tomorrow night into Wednesday. And that'll be followed by another disturbance that'll be just, you know, almost completely insignificant as it comes across the region on Thursday into Friday. Another one right behind it that will be a little bit more meaningful. This one arrives on Saturday and will produce upwards to an inch or two across, again, the upper Midwest and the Great Lakes region only. We don't expect to see much precipitation further to the south. And speaking of dry weather, most of the central and western parts of the U.S. are still extremely dry. It hasn't precipitated in a significant manner in many areas from California and parts of the Pacific Northwest into the west central U.S. plains for an extended period of time. Yes, we've had a couple of small systems, but in general, the region has been quite dry, and it looks like it'll be that way for the next 10 days to 2 weeks. So most of the U.S. Midwest is probably not going to be seeing much in the way of adverse weather for a while either, but the temperature bias is going to continue to be a little bit on the cool side, certainly today and tomorrow, but after that, we'll slowly get the temperatures to rebound back into something that's a little bit more reasonable for this time of the year.
That's Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City with the weather forecast, and wraps up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.